Captain here on The Bill Riley Show. This is a conversation with Cam Rising, presented by Nova Data Centers, renewable energy and waterless cooling, looking out for Utah's future. Now, here's Utah's field general and the voice of the Utes on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, noontime hour on a Thursday here on The Bill Riley Show. It's time for our weekly conversation with Cam Rising, University of Utah quarterback. Spring football is done. We only have a couple of these left. Today and then next week, we're going to kind of wrap up everything and look ahead to fall and chat again and all that stuff. And then we'll pick it back up again in late July, early August when we get closer to football again. But this is kind of our appetizer, if you will, and then we'll get toward the main course and the entrees in the fall. But we have spring football behind us. We have kind of an idea of how some things looked. Again, I always say spring football is not about winning jobs and positions. It's about kind of getting on the coach's radar and getting a feel for where things are and tweaking things as you get ready for fall camp. So we bring Cam in. He's brought to us by our friends at Nova Data Centers. You guys escaped spring football. It was good. You had the game last week. Mother Nature gave you snow and rain and everything else. As I told you, you're like, I don't know, maybe I'll play a half. I'm like, you'll play one or two series. You got one series. Yeah. It was a good series, but how was spring game?
It was a great time. I enjoyed having the hail and sleet coming down. That was fun. It made it a little bit more enjoyable. But once I got out, it was very, very cold. But it was a great day, and the team looked good.
Did you feel like you guys – well, we'll start with you. Did you feel like you got done this spring what you kind of wanted to get done this spring in both practice and scrimmages and the game last weekend?
Absolutely. It was all about being productive for the team, and I felt like we got better and we all improved. So that was the main goal, and the coaches did a great job making sure that we owned it each and every day.
What were you working on this spring? What were you kind of trying to get a little bit better at? Again, knowing it's spring ball, not fall camp, but what were you kind of tweaking and fine-tuning yourself?
Just really working on the deep balls and making those seam throws. That was a point of emphasis for throughout spring, and with the receivers, they've been making it easy for me to go complete those deep balls. They've been winning their one-on-ones, and it was productive.
So, you know, you guys come into spring with some questions. You know, guys are gone. Theo Howard's gone. Britton Covey's gone. Probably trying to figure out who your top wide receivers are. Do you feel like you've got an idea? Again, fall camp is really where jobs are won, but do you kind of have an idea of what you're working with right now?
Absolutely, yeah. We got a good idea. We've been working for the past 15 practices with the spring game, and yeah, we got a good idea of what we got going right now.
So it feels to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but you have a definitive and a very good relationship and rapport with Devon Vele.
Yeah, that's been going since 2019.
I was about to say it goes back to scout team, and we've talked about the scout team days back then, but it just felt like with the practices that we got to watch, with the games we got to watch, it feels like you and Devon are really locked in and on the same page. Like, you guys know what you want to do. You have a good kind of sense of where he goes. He knows what you like, where the ball's at. We saw it in the game Saturday. We saw it in scrimmages. Is that fair to say that you two guys are on the same page?
Absolutely. We got a great rapport when it comes to him running his routes. And yeah, I have a great idea of where he's going to be and what he's thinking on each route, so it makes it easy to complete the ball with him.
So that's there. Where would you say kind of things are with the rest of the wide receiving core? You got Solomon Enos who's there. You got Jalen Dixon who's there. You got Mekhi Cope who made a heck of a grab Saturday. Man. We'll get to that. You got Money Parks who's there. I'm just curious where kind of the hierarchy of the rest of the receivers kind of plays in, again, as you head toward fall camp.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think Brandt is in that conversation.
And Brandt, too.
He's been out there in that receiver room. And then, Solo, of course, is always going to be consistent. He's gonna make sure that he's there, always in the right position. So Money, Jalen, and Mekhi have been doing a great job stepping up and trying to fill those voids with the second group, so it's been going good.
You see a lot more things than we get to see because you're there for every throw and every practice and every rep. The Mekhi Cope catch was phenomenal. The one-armed up, getting the foot down, the whole thing. Are those things that you see a lot of in practice that maybe that we're just being exposed to? Are there Is there a lot more to some of these guys than maybe we've seen so far?
Absolutely. These guys make some very acrobatic and just crazy, ridiculous catches all the time, and they make it seem routine. And, yeah, just I really thought I wasn't going to be able to complete that ball to Mac. I thought I threw it outside on him, but he did a great job going to get it, and that's why I call him Mac and Cheese, because he makes plays like that.
That's his nickname?
Yeah,
Mac and Cheese?
Mac and Cheese.
Mac and Cheese.
Yes, sir.
All right, I'm going to work that in on the air next year with Mekhi Coe.
No doubt.
Is he good with that nickname?
When I call him, he likes it.
Okay, so good. I don't want it to be one of those things where I say it on the air and then I find out he's not very – because sometimes you give guys nicknames
no doubt.
They don't like the nicknames.
Absolutely.
But you can't control nicknames.
You can't.
Because other people give them to you. And if the nickname is the – what are the guys calling you?
Thick Boy 7.
Is there another one for you?
No.
Okay, it's always just Thick Boy. Thick Boy or Thick Boy 7.
Or Cam, yeah.
Okay, good enough. So how – you know, you see these great circus catches, and those are great. But a lot of times they'll tell you, okay, the circus catch is great, but those don't come very often.
No, don't.
To get on the field, you've got to be repetitive. You've got to run your routes. You've got to make the simple play all the time.
Absolutely.
Is that really the key with the young guys like Mekhi and Money, is not making the circus catch and the highlight catch, but is the key for them getting more reps this fall and getting on the field, maybe doing a little bit more of the simple stuff on a regular basis?
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to proving yourself to a coach, it comes down to consistency. If you're going to be in the right spot every time and you're going to make that catch when it is a routine catch and it is the fourth time that you ran that play in practice, so you have to just still go out there and be competitive in those reps and win consistently so that you can prove yourself to the coaches.
So I noticed after the white team won on Saturday, there was a little trash talking, guys running out on the field, doing some trash talking to the red side. You were a little bit of that. I think Devon may have been one of the guys out there doing some of that stuff. So was it friendly trash talk? Was it get-in-your-face trash talk? I mean, because the red team has to clean the facility now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They cleaned it on Monday.
Oh, they did?
Yeah,
okay.
It's all clean now. So that was a positive. But, yeah, it was definitely a little bit more in-your-face talking, and yeah, we let them hear it and let them know that they lost that game, and it was a great day for the white squad.
Now, you even did a little pregame trash talking
to
linebacker number 55 Andrew Mata'afa, didn't you?
Yes, sir. I told him I was going to go at him every play, and the first play went over his head, and then the touchdown went over his head. So it was a good day, and I got done what I wanted to get done. So.
Did he have any answer for you?
No, he didn't.
Did he say anything afterwards?
No, he didn't.
Okay, there's not much you can say.
No doubt.
Sometimes you just got to tip the cap or give him the salute.
Absolutely.
Did you give him the wink? Like you gave Lander Barton the wink?
Yes, sir. I'm always going to give the wink.
All right, very good. So you're standing there on the sideline. Mother Nature's raining things down. You know you play that series. Did you know you were only getting one?
Yeah, they told me.
They told you you're only getting one.
Yep.
So you put the hat on. You put the headset on. What's the rest of the day like for you? Are you just signaling plays in? Are you helping out Bryce? Because you're on the white side. Yeah. Are you helping Bryce now? What's going on?
Helping out Bryce, yeah, making sure that he doesn't get a touchdown called back for looking at the defender running in, and also just helping Coach Harden call the plays for the white squad. It was a good day, and we were productive.
So the guy sitting in the chair where you are right now last year did something very out of character in a game when he stood over a guy and flexed on him. And he got – now, a touchdown was not called back, but it was a play to like the 2 or 3 yard line that got backed up. We're talking, of course, about Britton Covey, and it was very out of character. And it was a little bit of a flex, and I could see where the referee called it, but I don't understand the flag on Bryson Barnes. Now, you were closer to the field. He ran kind of – he got to the 15. He kind of turned back sideways and kind of did the side pedal, back pedal into the end zone. Were there words being said? Because sometimes if there's some words, that might mean the flag, but he didn't point – he didn't throw up the Tyreek Hill peace sign. Didn't do any of that stuff. So I'm wondering why the flag came out, Cam. You were closer. Tell the story.
I mean, I'm personally wondering the same thing.
Okay.
But on the same note, I do understand what the refs are seeing. They're seeing him just stare at this guy that's running towards him and then jogging in backwards, it can be a little bit of showboating right there.
So was there anything said to him? I think it was Coach Ganther, right? Yeah. Quinton was your head coach.
Oh, it was more than just,
oh, really?
just Coach Q saying something to
okay.
him. He heard an earful from the whole staff.
Was the czar out there? Because I joked, on there were players on the field, referees on the field, and then I said the czar of the game is Kyle Whittingham, who's on the field too, walking around. Do you think he may have influenced that flag? Or was he okay with that flag?
Personally, I'm not too sure.
As a bit of a punishment to Mr. Barnes?
Yeah, I think Coach Led let him hear it enough on the sidelines and Coach Blakeney, so he got the point across, and I'm not sure what Coach Witt had to do, if he had anything to do with that, but yeah, it was definitely a punishable thing.
It was very interesting because it was a very un-Utah-like thing and not exactly something you would expect out of a backup quarterback to do, even in a spring game.
No doubt.
But I think you guys scored on the next drive. It was the next player, a play or two later, then the ball went in the end zone, right?
Yeah, so he made up for it all. So that was a positive for Bryson.
So as you're standing there on the sideline, you're helping Bryson out. You're also watching JJ on the other side. You're done for the day. You got the headset on. You're taking some mental notes. I'd be curious from your vantage point, because you're the starter, it's your job, it's your position. But you're in the same room with these guys. Brandon didn't play. Brandon Rose didn't play. He was, Kyle said he was, got picked up some sort of small injury, but he's fine. So it was those two guys getting the majority of the snaps. And I know Bateri got some snaps late, but it was those two guys. They're battling to back you up. And you've watched them all spring long. You're in the meeting rooms with them as well. I'd be curious how you kind of assessed, from your vantage point, not just Saturday, but the entire spring, how you felt like the backup quarterback battle went.
I think they did a great job throughout the whole entire game. They were moving the ball up the field, and I know there was a play or two that probably some of them want back, but yeah, it's just the way football goes, and they did a great job making sure that the guys were following their lead, and it was positive to see that.
So let's just look at it this way then. Where did Bryson Barnes make steps this spring from the last time we saw him throwing that touchdown to Kincaid in the Rose Bowl when you were out cold and not knowing whether it was Saturday or Tuesday?
Yes,
where have you seen Bryson make his biggest kind of leaps or gains over the last 3 or 4 months?
Knowledge of defense. He can see defenses now, and he'll see the pressures coming before they're coming, and also just learning those little small details, like they're going to shift to this front when they're lined up this way, and seeing those that have made the difference for him so far.
So JJ then, he was kind of the situational wildcat quarterback, third string guy. He had a little bit more room to make up. He hasn't been in the program as long. Where have you seen Jaquindon this spring from the end of the year when you saw him in practice till now? Where has he made the most strides?
Yeah, I mean, I think right next to Bryson, he's also learned a lot about defenses, and that's been a huge stride for him. It makes it easy for him to check out of plays, and he's got a lot more freedom with that because of his knowledge there, and also just knowing the system to where he can, okay, I don't like this, I'm going to change the play to what would be the most effective play in this situation, and that's where he made his drives.
You know, because you had to win a job yourself a couple of years ago, what will Andy Ludwig look at most when he's making the decision in August? And that's, he and Kyle Whittingham huddle, and maybe they'll ask your 2 cents worth on it too. But when they sit down in August during fall camp and you're getting ready to get ready for Florida, and they're ultimately going to decide who our number two guy is and who our number three guy is, what's most important for Andy, do you think, in that decision-making process? What will it ultimately come down to in picking who his number two guy is?
Just like with the receivers, it comes down to consistency. If you're going to check the play into the right situation more times than not, chances are the coaches are going to have more trust in you and will allow you to do more things with the offense. And if you're also making the throws that you should be making consistently, not missing your throws and completing the ball, no interceptions and no turnovers, just being smart, and that's really what it takes for those guys, and that's what they need to do, is just make sure that they're bringing it each and every play and not taking any reps for granted.
So every throw will be charted and watched in fall camp, right?
Yeah.
So every throw matters.
They keep
whether you're
everything.
Doing 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 or you're
absolutely
just throwing Skelly, whatever it might be. Every throw will matter for the Andy and his staff will look at every one of those things, and they'll chart everything when they're making their decision.
Yep. Especially every competitive when it's 11-on-11, that's really when it locks in is very important. Yeah, of course, like 7-on-7 and stuff, that stuff is important as well. But, yeah, you have to be consistent with it.
Most impressive newcomer for you this spring was who? Go offense or defense? Or give me one of each. Give me an offensive guy that really impressed you or a defensive guy that really impressed you this spring.
I'd say Jalen Glover on offense. He did a great job just really owning everything and listening to coach and taking the coaching and making sure that he doesn't make the same mistake twice. And that was a huge positive for the offense, seeing him in the RB room take over. And then I think Lander Barton. He's dominating, and he's got a great coach in Coach Swan, and he's preparing him, getting him ready.
You and I were talking about this, I don't know, it was a little while ago. That linebacker room is really deep and young but talented. You mentioned Lander. I thought Justin Medlock had a really good game Saturday and had a good spring. And even Carson Tabarachi from Park City, who's a freshman too, had some moments both in the game and throughout the spring. Those three guys are all freshmen, all early entry freshmen.
No doubt, and they're all playmakers too. And they're students of the game that love studying, love getting better. So it's just going to be a great fit having Coach Swan teach him up and get him ready to go.
So spring is done. You know, Kyle told us the other day he's having kind of player meetings all week long. Kind of what are those postseason and post spring play? I mean, you don't have to go into details. I think you've met with him already. Which, again, hey Cam, thanks. We'll talk about this, talk about that. But you know, what are those meetings usually like? Is it a long meeting? Is he going over specific things with players? Is he going over kind of big picture what he wants you to? What are those kind of end of spring, end of season meetings like with coaches?
Pretty much just gives you a review on what you did throughout the spring, and also kind of just talks about like what you need to do, what needs to happen, where you need to improve, and yeah, and pretty much he doesn't like to sugarcoat anything. He'll just tell you how it is, and it's very, very beneficial because you know what you need to do, and you have a good idea of everything that is wanted from you from the coaches and that they need to happen for the team.
You don't want a coach sugarcoating things, though,
no,
do you?
Absolutely.
I mean, I know you don't.
No.
And you want to know where you – I mean, I'm one of these people. I want to know where I stand with somebody.
No doubt.
I don't want somebody to blow sunshine at me and come back at me later, and I'm like, well, you didn't tell me that. Are you at a point now where he's asking you for some input too?
Yeah, he
I mean, you're captain, leader, quarterback, the whole thing. I would guess there's a handful of guys that he probably asked for feedback from too.
Yes, sir. And yeah, he's a player's coach, so he does listen to his players. And I even asked for a little switch in the warm up one day, and he listened to me. So thank you for listening to me, Coach. I really appreciate it. I know the team does as well.
You get a switch in the warm up. You get new soap in the showers.
Oh, yeah. You name it, Coach Witt will
make
it happen.
Whatever, Coach Witt makes it happen for you guys. Cam Rising's in with us. We've got a couple of more of these this spring. We'll pick it back up, our conversation with Cam. Brought to you by Nova Data Centers here on the Bill Riley Show on ESPN 700. I wanted to ask you, we haven't really talked a ton about this, but I wanted to kind of get your 2 cents worth on NIL. Obviously, you're a beneficiary of it, and that's great. And I've always said, hey, players should be able to monetize yourself. People have been able to monetize their stuff and their image on you. I'm not a big salary guy. I'm not a big, hey, let's give these guys salaries, because then you're going to throw the system all cattywampus. But I think you should be able to use your name, image, and likeness and do it. So we're now, what are we, 2 years in, year and a half, kind of year and a half into this thing, and it's still the Wild West. There's no real rules for this. It kind of is school by school, conference by conference. But give me, before we talk big picture, give me kind of your individual experience and how NIL has impacted you here at Utah.
For me, it's been a positive. I can't complain in any regards of NIL. The whole entire state of Utah has helped taking care of me, and that's been a positive. And, yeah, just seeing my teammates and stuff get helped out, it's always a great thing to just see that. And yeah, it really changes the dynamic of college sports, just because now that players are making money, there's it's not as like the coaches just have the power in those situations, and it changes the dynamic, just because like we talked about earlier, the rich get richer in these situations.
If you're smart and you go about it the right way, it could be really beneficial. I'm curious, because you play quarterback, and you're a good quarterback on a very high-profile team in this market, in this region, I'm curious, with NIL, are people coming at you all the time with this stuff? Has it been just a little bit here and there? Are you saying no to some, yes to others? How are you dealing with it?
Yeah, I have an agent that, right. that helps me manage that and pretty much sees all the offers that I can get and that I receive, and he manages it for me and tells me that, oh, this is a good one, this is a okay right. opportunity. So just allows me to kind of make those choices myself.
And obviously that's good, whether it's, you know, whether your agent happens to be somebody that's an agent or you have a very, you know, informed and on it parent or guardian.
No doubt.
And in your case, you've kind of got both your dad and your agent.
Absolutely.
Are you having to manage it the right way? Are you saying, nah, I want to do this much, but football is still ultimately what I want to focus on the most? Because I think when you look around, some of these guys, and I think, you know, ultimately you want to supplement it as much as you can, but your goal is to play and be a quarterback in the NFL.
I don't. That's the end goal right there.
That's the end goal.
Number one most important.
That's your career, and that's where you will make your living and your money and whatever supports you for the rest of your life. To me, the NIL stuff is great now to supplement where you are and help your quality of life and things like that. But, you know, I've always worried about guys getting too tied up in the NIL stuff now. And if you get your eye off the grand prize, you may not get to where you ultimately want to go.
Yeah, I mean, when you get paid for these opportunities and you make money off of them, you have to do stuff and you require time to go out there and spend an hour and signing autographs or doing this, doing that. So you have to really be selective with what you do, because you can't go out there and just start signing up for everything, because you're going to lose all the time that you had that you needed to put towards football. And during season, really, I don't think I'll take one opportunity that will require time throughout the week, just because it is football season and this is where the money really comes.
Well, that's the thing. These are all jobs.
Yeah.
I think there were maybe some guys, maybe some of your teammates were this way, that just thought it was going to be free money.
Yeah.
And it's not as if you're digging ditches or roofing houses or working in a coal mine, but it's still time and it's still a job. And when people are handing you money, they expect something in return. It's a transaction here.
Yeah.
And you've got to be selective in that, because your ultimate job is playing quarterback.
Yeah.
That's the main job, and all these others are kind of side hustles. I have main jobs. This is my main job, play by play. But I have side hustles too, but I can't let the side hustles distract me from what the main job is.
Yeah, and I always think back to Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan always talked about all the love and stuff that he was getting from Nike and how his whole entire life pretty much changed, but he had to go out there and still prove it on the court each and every night that he is the greatest, and that's just kind of the mentality that I'm trying to adopt, and making sure that it's all my chips are in on football and not really just focusing on going and getting these NIL opportunities.
Yeah, because if you don't do the main one, the other opportunities, they go away.
They don't matter.
Yeah, if you're out throwing three interceptions and not being prepared to play against Florida or USC, they're like, well, Camp's a pretty fun guy, but, you know, we're backing him because he's our guy and he's the best quarterback on the field.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to go out there and prove it each and every day that you are the best and that you deserve to be in those situations. And yeah, that's why you got to just focus on football.
From your vantage point, big picture with NIL, you know, what, how do you kind of see it impacting college football big time? Because we're now kind of, you know, last year and parts of this year were kind of the initial wave where things were figuring it out. Now schools and support groups and boosters and collectives are beginning to figure this out. Do you feel like it's beginning to change recruiting and the way kids and schools look at recruiting?
Absolutely. I mean, if you would have told me coming out of high school that I can get paid $100K going to this school or $20K going to this school, chances are I'm going to go take $100K, because that's life-changing money for a high school kid and can really change the dynamic. And that will also just lead to schools like Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia, those really rich schools that have such a good fan base that really come in and are not afraid to just throw – pretty much millions into the bank accounts of the players, and yeah, that's what's going to end up happening.
You know, I've said this. I think eventually we're going to get to a point, Cam, where these deals, these NIL deals, there's going to be probably a little bit more organization with them. But I think they're going to be structured a little bit like real contracts. Yeah. I think what you're going to end up doing is for guys, you know, because you're seeing these 4- and 5-star kids come out of high school and getting these big deals, they've not proven anything.
Nope.
And you know, especially the position you play, it's the hardest position to project forward. And especially a quarterback, too, you may not get on the field for a year or two.
Or three,
yeah. But it might be 2 years until you get on the field. So I think eventually, my feeling is, you're going to see these deals structured where you get a signing bonus.
Yeah.
Where you know, you're a 4-star or 5-star kid that comes into a program. Here's your bonus for coming here. Here's your $100,000 for coming and committing to the school. Now, what you get paid moving forward really depends on how much you play. It's almost like incentives or performance bonuses.
Yeah.
You know, once you get on the field as a starter, then it's different. Mm. But if you're a you're going to get your $100,000 for committing here, but if you don't play this year, you might get another $15,000 or whatever the fee is. But once you get on the field, then, you know, and then if you become an all-conference or you become an all-American, there's boom, boom. I just think they're going to be end up being structured that way, because in college especially, you could be throwing so much money away on kids that may never perform.
Yeah.
Just because you just don't know. Basketball's a little bit different, because in basketball you play on that AAU circuit and you have a pretty good feel for where these kids are going to be. But in football, it's just so hard to project forward. So I think it may not be for a couple of years, but I think eventually these things are going to get structured to where signing bonus to come to school X. When you come to Utah or you come to USC or Notre Dame, here's your signing bonus, $250,000. You're a quarterback. But your next big check's going to come once we see what you can do on the field.
And that's
the big ones. Now, you might get smaller deals, you know, like, you know, with local businesses for going and making appearances and things. But the big money, the signing bonus stuff, I think it's going to end up having to be a little bit more performance-based.
Yeah, I mean, just it is crazy to think that there are just high school kids just about to go make $1 million for signing.
Well, how about the kid from Texas, Quinn Ewers?
Yep.
He came out of high school, left early, went to Ohio State, got some gigantic 6-figure deal, and never played a down, and now he's not even at Ohio State anymore. He's back in Texas again. So, I mean, that company that gave him that deal, I mean, there's no way they made their money on that, so they're probably going to think twice before they do it again, and that's why you structure it the right way.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important to make sure that you really know what you have and,
exactly.
And what you got going in, and usually it's probably best to just wait until those kids get on the field, but you got to do what you got to do get the recruits.
Because somebody else might do it.
Exactly.
But I think there's going to be, for a couple of years, this feeling out process, and some schools and some companies and people are going to throw some money and then go, oh, wait a minute, that guy never played for us. Let's figure out a better way to do this where it's beneficial for both sides.
Yeah. The only thing that can really happen is if a guy goes to a smaller school and he plays very well and he only got that $20,000 deal.
Oh yeah.
Then Alabama's sitting there just like, oh, this is a really great receiver. We can add him to the group and he'd fit right in. And then boom, he goes up to a $200,000 deal. And
that's just the sad that see it's really going to benefit the bigger schools and the Power Five schools. It's going to hurt some smaller schools.
Absolutely.
It's going to hurt that, because somebody's going to go to school for 2 years and really pop and look great. Then all of a sudden, you know, because the transfer portal's there and they've really exploded, Utah, Alabama, somebody's going to come in and say, man, we need a wide receiver, and this kid was unbelievable. He's getting a $15,000, $20,000 there? We'll double that, triple that, 10 times that, and get him to come to our school.
Like it's nothing.
But that's the free market system.
Yeah. But I mean it does balance the playing field for players, because if a coach has another opportunity to go get paid $300,000 more, they're probably going to take that deal without and not even bat an eye and lose any sleep over it. So.
Well, it's what I've said too. It really benefits the high end guys.
Absolutely.
It's not benefiting everybody that way. That's why it's nice to have some of those team wide collectives where a lot of guys get to benefit. Because I don't know if you saw this stat the other day, the transfer portal number. Did you see this number?
Was it 52% are going?
In 20 and 21, there were like 3,000 kids that went into the transfer portal over those couple of years, and only 54% of them landed scholarships someplace else. 54%. I mean, that's nuts.
Saturated so market.
That's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, the proverbial grant, you may have to enjoy your, you know, think twice about leaving, because at least you've got a scholarship and you're playing some football and you're on a team somewhere. You may end up someplace where you're not on scholarship anymore.
Absolutely. And the grass is not always greener on the other side. Just because you may not like the situation you're in, it doesn't mean that it's the worst situation that's out there. You just have to go out there and try and change that situation for yourself in those situations. And yeah, if you're transferring, it's not easy, and there's no guarantee that you can go anywhere, and you may end up having to go to a JUCO just because you wanted to leave, but there's no opportunity because every other school already signed what they needed, and they're just kind of handpicking from that.
Well, and to be very fair, there's worse things than having to go to a JUCO for a year.
Yeah.
Especially if you play a position like, say, quarterback, like you do. You're really just trying to get an opportunity to show people what you can do. Because, you know, if you're leaving a program and you've been a backup and you haven't played, it's 3 years maybe since you've actually really been on the field. And coaches have forgotten about you in some ways, and they want to see some real live tape of you and what you can do. So if you have to leave a program, go to JUCO, throw for 3,000 or 4,000 yards at JUCO, and then you still have 2 more years at a big program, that's not the worst thing in the world.
No, it's great. I almost went to JUCO.
That's
coming
what you were
out.
Saying, yeah, after Texas, right?
Yeah, I was debating on going to Ventura College or whether I wanted to go to another school, but thank God the University of Utah came and got me. So
man, everything works out for a reason,
yes,
one
sir.
Way or another.
Yes,
it certainly
sir.
Does. We're talking to Cam Rising here for a couple of more minutes here on the Bill Riley Show today. Nova Data Centers brings it to us. So we've got fall camp. You know, I think we're now – let me do the quick math. I think we're 129 days from kickoff in Gainesville.
Sounds
somewhere
right.
Somewhere in that range, 128 days from kickoff in Gainesville. What would you say is, you know, if you're making a checklist, and maybe you and Coach Witt talked about this, maybe you and Coach Ludd talked about this, if you're making an offensive checklist of things that you've got to kind of get worked on and get better before the opener as fall camp heads in, what are the priorities heading into fall camp?
I think everything. I don't think
really?
There's one thing that we're just, oh, we're good. Not there's,
really?
Yeah, you have to always improve. If you're not improving, you're getting worse. And I think this is just a situation where we have to really be turning over those rocks to make sure that we're finding everything and leaving no stone unturned so that we know that what everything that we need to do and where our weak spots are.
Is there anything big? Would you say is there anything major, or is it just a lot of fine-tuning of little things?
More fine-tuning.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Were you in that same place last year, or a year ago, was there more major work to do?
I felt like there was more major work.
With the offense?
Yeah, absolutely. Just kind of solidifying the offensive line. I didn't think we had that kind of structure. This year, I feel like we have a little bit more structure going on, and it's kind of meshing a little bit better.
Were you throwing yet a year ago at this time?
No, I was not. Oh, maybe 15 yards, 20 yards at most.
So a year ago at this time, spring football wraps up. Charlie had a good spring. He looked really good. Where was your mind a year ago at this time?
Get healthy.
Just get healthy?
Get healthy.
Were you thinking about winning the starting job at this time, or were you just thinking about getting healthy?
Absolutely. Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was number one thing on my mind, get healthy so I can win the job. That was the main focal point. That's what I work for each and every day.
What was it, be honest with me here, because you can, we're a year removed. Were you optimistic then that you could win the job, or were you just say, let me just get healthy, be in the mix, and see what happens?
I mean, people around me didn't really feel
right.
Any optimism, so I was the only one that really? had
you
to
were the guy. It was just all in you.
Pretty much, yeah. I was the only one that kind of believed in it and really thought that I was going to be back. And not there was no real receivers or anything that thought I was even going to be close to being back during the season, so. Yeah, I was just ready for it.
When did it hit you that you were going to be able to compete for the job?
Probably like 2 weeks before camp.
Really?
Yeah, that's,
so it was that late. It was July before you were like, okay, I'm gonna be able to do this.
That was like the first week I got cleared to throw more than 3 days in, throughout the week. So I was just itching and excited. I got a little nervous that I was gonna have to throw 6 days in a row, but the coaches allowed me to make sure that I can keep my arm and not have to overthrow each and every day, so it made my life easier.
So what will you do now? You know, we'll have one more of these next week, but what, you know, are you gonna, you're gonna be here this summer, obviously. You're gonna be throwing all the time with the guys,
yeah,
and all that stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. Getting work in whenever we can and just really, really getting ready for season.
How much can get done there? I mean, you're not, there's no coaching. It's you guys getting together by yourselves. But you know the playbook. Are you running legit routes? I mean, you're running the regular routes, or are you doing your own thing? How when you conduct your own workouts when it's players only, what are you doing?
Yeah, we do have this belief that everything you're doing, it should be exactly what you're going to be doing in game. So running full speed routes, making sure that we're just always having that timing, because whenever there's an off corner in the situation, we want to make sure that it's pretty much routes versus air in those situations, and that's why we run the same routes over and over, and just really hone in on making sure that we lock in and aren't overstriding on some breaks and doing stuff like that. And I'm throwing it on one hitch rather than two. So just making sure that all those details for every route structure and every route combination that we have are where it needs to be.
Do you ever have the DBs come out?
Yeah, we do. Yeah,
sometimes have them come out and just give you a little look.
Absolutely, do some shadow one-on-ones or even just go all out one-on-ones.
Because they can get beneficial work out of that too, right?
No doubt. Everybody gets better from just playing football and going out there and doing it. You know, it's one thing to just sit there and watch a bunch of film and do all that, but you have to eventually go out there and prove it and do everything that you're learning. That's when you get better.
All right, before we get out of here, I'm going to take fans behind the curtain here.
Yep.
You're heading down to San Diego today, and you're pretty excited about this, right?
Yep.
You're getting fitted for some custom golf clubs.
Yeah.
How excited are you about this?
I'm ecstatic. I can't wait to get down there and just go hit them and just go try them out. It's going to be a great time.
We'll give them a little plug. TaylorMade, right?
Yeah, TaylorMade. Hopefully getting the stealth bombers, but we'll find out when I get there, but looking forward to it.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
They're taking you in. They're fitting you up. They're getting – these are going to be basically Cam Rising clubs.
Yes, sir.
I mean, you can't buy these. They're customing these for him, but they're going to be yours. They're going to be fit to you and your swing and all that stuff.
Hopefully they're the same clubs that Scottie Scheffler was using in the Masters.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, have fun in San Diego. Keep it classy. Thanks for coming in. Congrats on a good spring, and we'll do one more of these next week.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Bill.
Cam Rising with us here on the Bill Riley Show, brought to you by Nova Data Centers.